Hello, Radio World. This is Hazy. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM.
Broadcasting Vancouver's haziest since 1950.
You're so dumb. Bought a new guitar, now you think you're famous, but you're fun. Yeah, you're number one.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM. We are a progressive politics show broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory on UBC's Point Grey campus. I'm your host, Spencer Latu, and we're joined today by special guests Dahlia and Mac. And for today's show, we are speaking truth to power about Palestine and the recent Israeli destruction of East Jerusalem homes of Palestinians. But before we get to all that, I would like to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the unceded territory of the Coast Salish peoples, including the territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations. So keeping in that strain of thought about settler colonialism and the occupied territory on which we sit, there is another occupied territory on planet Earth. It's not just North America. There's also the contested territories, and the state of Israel really has been transplanted on top of the Palestinian people. There's incredible amounts of death and destruction handed down by the Israeli state, always, of course, supported by the rest of the West. So all the NATO nations, especially Canada, massive supporters of what's going on there. It's a contentious political issue, to say the least. However, if we're going to take settler colonialism seriously and decolonization of Canada seriously, you're going to have to reckon with the complicity and actual the joining in of Canada, and not just the settler colonialism that's happening here against Indigenous peoples of Canada, but the settler colonialism that's happening in other parts of the world that Canada plays an active part in. So I'm joined today by my special guests, Mac and Dahlia. I'm very lucky to have them because they have amazing stories themselves and have been doing amazing work with Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights, a club at UBC. And they have amazing perspectives to share from the ground. So I guess I'll turn this over to Mac. Hi, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh,
so
thank you for having me.
If you could please introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your story and how it relates to Israel-Palestine.
Well, me, myself, I'm a Palestinian from Gaza, and I was born there. And after the Second Intifada, my family had to flee Palestine. And we lived basically in the diaspora, Egypt, Yemen, and then we ended up here in Canada.
Wow, that's incredible. So you've been directly affected by settler colonialism in Israel-Palestine, and, you know, we're very lucky to have you here to share with your amazing perspectives and what you've gone through, which, you know, brought you here today, but also will help, I, at least in my opinion, hope give another side to the story, because as we critique the media a lot on this show, there's only one perspective ever heard. The last time we discussed the killing of protesters at the Gaza, not border fence, prison fence, really, yeah, is an open-air prison, as David Cameron says, and how horribly portrayed Palestinians are. They're treated in an orientalistic way, that they're these monsters at the gate, but in reality they're human beings that are being subjected to horrific conditions by the state of Israel. So I'll turn this over to our other special guest, Dahlia. Hi, Dahlia.
Hi, thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming. Okay, so maybe if you could introduce yourself and tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
So I'm also Palestinian. I'm from the West Bank, as they say, Nablus. And my father was a Palestinian refugee from Nablus, while my mother was a refugee from Tiberias, present day. And so I wouldn't say I've had a direct impact from the Palestinian occupation, but I would say that I've had basically a life's upbringing on the Palestinian cause.
Wow, that's incredible, yeah. And it's quite the cause to fight. It's very hard, especially in our own city. We're just taking over from Democracy Watch, and they were reporting on the anti-Semitism definition bill that was being put through, the anti-Semitism motion that was put through Vancouver City Council. So the fight is not just in Israel-Palestine. It's all over the world, because this is an internationalist cause. There's people from the diaspora, like Mac himself right in front of me, and also people forget this. There's Palestinians killed in the Christchurch shooting, right? Why were they in New Zealand? Well, they were displaced from their homes in Palestine. So if we want to really understand migrant justice and not just make it a buzzword, you know, you really got to deal with what are the causes of this. So I think what we discussed off air is the first obstacle we deal with is the media portrayal of Palestinians, because obviously Israel-Palestine is not covered in schools, and if it is, it's done terribly in a really Canadian-centric point of view, and what the Canadian state's position on is, it is one of the seven countries that votes against the motions passed in the UN. There is a vote in the UN General Assembly every year on the question of Palestine. Every year, the vote is essentially the same. The vast majority of the world supports the resolution, and the U.S., Israel, and some small U.S.-occupied islands, and sometimes a handful of other countries opposed to resolution. In 2018, the vote was 153 in favor, 7 against. The 7 against were Canada, Israel, Marshall Islands, Micronesia, Nauru, Palau, and the United States. So Canada is part of the problem, and when they educate people on it, they're going to give one side, which is the Canadian side, and the Canadian side is also the Israeli side. So I'll turn it over to my guests here. If you were to pick a few things of media representation of Palestinians, what do you think the biggest issues are from what you've experienced and what you've gone through and how people treat you because of what they learn from our current corporate media?
First of all, there's a lot of misconceptions about us as Palestinians. You know, just saying that I'm Palestinian, there is a lot of negative connotations that come with it. You'll be surprised by the amount of people that say, "Oh, I hate the Jewish people too." Although, you know, Like, it's very racist of you to assume I'm racist.
Yeah, it was built into your character. It's built in where you're from, which is totally, you know, totally not true. In fact, I know you personally, and you're always fighting for social justice for all people. So it's not even, and you stand up against anti-Semitism, against racism in general. So it's kind of, you know, where do people get these ideas? Well, you know, CNN only shows Palestinians, shows Palestinian rockets going into Israel, you know, and what are these rockets even, right? You know, it's almost like fireworks compared to what the Israeli state does to the people of Gaza, people of the West Bank, of all the occupied territories. So, Dalia, what has your experience been with media representation of Palestinians and how it's kind of affected your life?
I think another issue would be misrepresentation, the fact that there's only two extreme sides. One side would be that these people, they're like living in extreme poverty, which is true in the state of Gaza, but that they have no lives, they have no thoughts, they're just victims. And then I think the other end is that, you know, they're terrorists or they're just listening to what the government says. And I think there's the issue is that there's no in between. It's not showing you the other side. So people such as myself who grew up abroad, you know, I was born in Saudi Arabia because my father wasn't able to go back to where he was from. My mother had refugee status for her entire life. So I think with people such as myself, you know, growing up in the diaspora, there's a misrepresentation on the fact that you are kind of struggling. But there's also, for me, I think we need to humanize the fact. Mm-hmm. We need to show that the media doesn't show this side. The people are just trying to live, move on with their lives, you know, get a family, work, and for me, I think that my entire life has been leading up to the moment of fighting for a free Palestine. Mm-hmm. And getting into the world of politics in which it's very biased and it's very anti-Palestinian representation, anti-Palestinian voices. And I think that that's what the media struggles to do. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where we need to be going forward.
Yeah, like we're really stripped out of our humanity. We're really dehumanized to the point that we're looked at statistics. We're looked at subhumans, violent subhumans who just want to kill and destroy everything. Although we're regular human beings, as Dalia said.
Like the rest of us.
Like anyone else on the planet Earth who just want a regular life, you know, build a family, build a future, and
live peacefully and coexist.
Is
that too much to ask? Yeah. So, I mean, Dalia, you mentioned a couple things. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned the dichotomous thinking. So that's something that I hope our listeners are being aware of. So a key to propaganda is to give two very simplistic sides. Mm-hmm. And that should be a red flag because that's not how any issue in the world works. It's not sports where there's a team A and team B. You know, it's not Seahawks versus Patriots in the Super Bowl. Okay. Like reality is far more complex than that. So there's that angle. And then, of course, you know, let's maybe ask the question why presented in such a simplified and almost I'm searching for the word, almost it's like a hysterical kind of narrative where it's just these two extremes fighting against each other. When in reality, but why would the media package it that way? Well, that's what gets people tuning into it, right? So rather than, you know, educating people on this extremely complex issue with a ton of history leading up to it, instead it's reduced to these two simplistic narratives. And I think that, you know, it's not even two simplistic narratives, it's one narrative from one side. So that's why I'm very happy to have you guys on today too. You know, help flesh out what's been going on. So, I mean, we've covered Gaza before on the show. We know how horrible the Israeli state is treating the people of Gaza. So I have a few facts about Gaza. And so this is Israel is a settler colonial nation. And we're going to start to see a lot of parallels between that and Canada. So, and how you control a population you're trying to subjugate. So, I mean, so a few facts here. The United Nations, international human rights organizations, and the majority of governments and legal commentators consider Gaza to be currently occupied by Israel. Israel imposes an illegal blockade on Gaza. International aid groups, including Amnesty International, CARE International UK, and Oxfam, call on Israel to lift the blockade, calling it collective punishment against the 1.5 million residents of the territory. According to the International Committee of the Red Cross, the hardship faced by Gaza's 1.5 million people cannot be addressed by providing humanitarian aid. The only sustainable solution is to lift the closure. The ICRC has also referred to the blockade as a collective punishment imposed in a clear violation of Israel's obligation under international humanitarian law. So, I mean, Mac, that's kind of, you know, these are just a few, you know, overarching facts about what's going on there. Maybe if you would, you know, be as kind to share with us kind of your experiences with the illegal blockade and being in the occupied territory of Gaza.
Well, first of all, how the blockade impacts me personally, I cannot go back home. And last time I have been back home was 2006. And ever since, I have not seen my family inside the Gaza Strip. And if last time I, like, for example, I see my grandmother was outside of Gaza in Egypt in 2010. And I have never seen her ever before, although my family always wanted to go back home. And unfortunately, my grandma passed away without being able to see her. So this is one of the ways, like the Israeli blockade on Gaza, impacts us. Like even trying to see family members, it's nearly impossible to do so. And not to mention the frequent assaults that happen on the people in the Gaza Strip, where a lot of people, as innocent civilians, they lose their lives just simply because they're living in this open-air prison that they cannot escape or go out of.
Yeah, Gaza is an open-air prison. That's a quote from the former UK Prime Minister, David Cameron. So he's from the Tory party. This is not coming from, you know, Noam Chomsky or any other leftist. This is coming from a pretty brutal conservative. Another fact for the listeners. In May 2010, the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs stated that the formal economy in Gaza has collapsed since the imposition of the blockade. They also stated that the restrictions imposed on the civilian population by the continuing blockade of the Gaza Strip amount to collective punishment, a violation of international human law. So I'll pass this over to my guest. So question for you, Dalia. In your study of international relations, where else in the world can we see a comparable situation to what's happening in Gaza? Is there anything that is going on currently that's as brutal as what's happening to these people? Mac obviously gave us a really harrowing narrative, and I'm very sorry that you didn't see your grandma. It's it really is a crime against humanity, because I couldn't think of anything worse than destroying families, which we're all supposed to be very upset about because Trump is doing it. Trump is tearing apart families, but so is this blockade of Gaza. So turning over to Dalia.
I think that we should establish the fact that within the issue of Palestine, it's a human cause, and a lot of people politicize the issue. And although this is, you know, discussion of politics, I think the issue with politicizing this is that people tend to stay away from it and kind of disassociate with the fact that these are innocent people who are being occupied by I don't want to say regime, but by illegal occupier. Mm-hmm. That's
according to the UN, not even your words. This is not the crazy lefties coming up with this. This is the UN.
Exactly. So this is the issue with that. We need to humanize these people and see that we can connect this issue with many other places in the world. You know, we can even get people from Kashmir, people from Kurdistan. Mm. These people are trying to fight for their autonomy, their sovereignty.
Yes,
and we can even see this from Turtle Island to Mexico.
Yeah,
the indigenous people in Canada. All so I'm trying to say that this is a universal cause.
Yeah,
and this cause should be affecting everyone in the world, because this issue of claiming your own sovereignty shouldn't be this difficult.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of people who suffer from an identity crisis or suffer from, you know, being able to be on their territories will understand that being displaced is not a political issue. It's a human issue, and it's a concern for human rights. All the violations that Israel perpetuates on the Palestinians every single day, especially in Gaza, is not okay. And that's why there is a universality to it. And especially in the world of international relations, a lot of people don't really see it as such because they want to stay away from the matter and kind of see it as an issue of politics.
Yeah, it's certainly not politics, it's your human lives. So before we go to commercial, Mac, so the UN calls it a violation of international human law, and that the economy has collapsed. Could you maybe share with our listeners what the conditions for life in Gaza are? We reported earlier on the show about how most of the water is poisonous to the population there. Half the population is children, and that the Israeli state, their own words, are putting Gaza on a diet, a forced diet, mm-hmm. to limit their caloric intake. So, yeah. you know, pretty harrowing account. So maybe if you could, you know, humanize this for us, personalize it, and, you know, share what you know about Gaza.
Well, first of all, electricity, for example, Gazans have only 4 to 6 hours a day of access to electricity. So, and it could come at any time of the day. It could be like early in the morning, like 1 a.m., 2 a.m., so when everybody's asleep. Second of all, there's no access to clean drinkable water. In fact, 98% of the water in Gaza is contaminated by lead. And the healthcare system is at a very basic level. So a lot of people who suffer from long-term illness such as cancer have to try to seek a treatment outside, but that's very difficult given the fact that they cannot travel or go wherever they want, and they have to apply for a permit from the Israeli authorities to get treatment in the West Bank, which is also supposed to be a Palestinian territory. So, Palestinians have to ask the Israeli authorities for permission to travel between one Palestinian area to the other Palestinian area, which is very unheard of in any country out there.
Mm-hmm. Except for our own country, where, you know, off air, Mac was giving me a history lesson on the treatment of indigenous people here. And you mentioned earlier what was it like for people on reserve? You were telling me about their that they had to do similar things with the people, like the people of Gaza.
Yeah. So from what I learned here at school about the indigenous people, it was very surprising to me, because it's the same system that is being applied today in Palestine. So back, I'm not sure on the timeline, but it's around the early 1900s, maybe even late 1800s. There was a Canadian system called the pass system, where indigenous people, where if they wanted to travel from point A to point B, they had to apply for a permit from the Canadian authorities to allow them to travel from point A to point B. And in a lot of cases, these permits will be denied, just as in Palestine today. Although it will be for medical needs. So this is the reality that people are facing today, and people faced over here in this land.
Yeah, so settler colonialism, it's not an event, folks. It's a process, it's a system, and it can be used not just in Turtle Island, but it can be used just in Israel-Palestine as well. We're going to have to take a short break for commercials, but we'll be right back after that.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or f*** with Discorder online at discorder.com.
Oh, man.
What?
I really wanted to catch that football game, but I have to clean my room. I'm so bummed.
Yo, man, totally chill out. You can catch it on CITR.
CITR?
Did someone say CITR?
Yeah.
CITR Radio brings you Thunderbird Sports on the weekends. Catch all the action and don't miss a moment of play with our live play-by-play and color commentary. Only on CITR 101.9 FM.
Wow, that's great.
And if you can't catch the game, tune in at 3:30 p.m. every Thursday for our weekly update on UBC Athletics with live scores, recaps, and in-depth analysis.
Oh, okay, dude. Okay, dude. We get it.
Dude!
Only on CITR.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show. So wrapping up our discussion about, Mahmoud's and Dahlia's stories, personal narratives, I think we need to, really hammer home how this is not a purely political issue. This is obviously there's politics involved, and we've discussed on the show previously politics, but it's very important to fight back against the dehumanizing and orientalistic media portrayals of these people and the simple dichotomistic narratives of good versus evil that the mainstream media tries to push onto people. But we need to understand that this is a issue of settler colonialism. We know what's happening here, what the genocide of indigenous people has resulted from settler colonialism, and the same thing is happening to the Palestinians by Israel. So I mean, there's a really harrowing quote from Israeli settler state quote-unquote justice minister Ayelet Shaked from 2015. "This is not a war against terror and not a war against extremists. Who is the enemy? The Palestinian people. The entire Palestinian people is the enemy. In wars, the enemy is usually an entire people, including its elderly and its women, its cities and its villages, its property and its infrastructure. In our war, this is sevenfold more correct. Every brave jihad, that means mother of a little snake terrorist, so really horrible to say about another human being, who sends her son to hell should know she's going with him, along with the house and everything inside it. Their houses should be bombed from the air with intention to destroy and to kill. And it should be announced that we will do this from now on to every home of every martyr. There is nothing more just and probably nothing more efficient." So that is, something that you're not going to hear in mainstream media, certainly not anything CBC is going to report on, because in reality, as much as they try to put the label extremist on Palestinian human rights activists, Palestinian people, and Palestinian resistors of the Israeli settler state, in reality, the Israelis themselves have some disgusting, horrible views and genocidal ideas about Palestinians. So we need to have that in our mind, especially as we move to our next story about the recent events, which, prompted me to ask you guys to come on the show, but was this is the headline from Electronic Intifada, Israeli rampage of destruction in Jerusalem village. So this is written by Tamara Nassar, posted the 22nd of July, 2019. So before we get into the article, maybe if you could give the listeners some, just a simple background, because even I'm struggling with this. So if you could describe maybe what the situation is regarding East and West Jerusalem, what the separation of the people there are. Yeah.
Do you want me or Dahlia?
Whoever feels that they can do it better. I mean, I'm struggling to get it. I understand from this article there's a wall. There's an area B, an area A, an area B, an area C, and that the Palestinians are separated and are, especially in area A, which is supposed to be under Palestinian Authority control, but is in reality controlled by the Israelis. So.
Yeah, so basically under the Oslo Accords, the peace, which was supposedly to be the peace agreement to lead to a Palestinian state by 1999, they divided the Palestinian territories known as today Gaza Strip, West Bank, and East Jerusalem into three zones. So the three zones are A, B, C. Now, you were wondering, what are those? So Area A is supposed to be under full Palestinian autonomy, while under B is partial Palestinian autonomy, but under Israeli security. So the presence of the Israeli army is normalized. And under C, it's under full Israeli control, both from a civilian aspect and a military aspect. That's area A, B, and C.
Okay, yeah. So it's the IDF, the same military force that's killed dozens of children protesting in Gaza, are supposed to be in control of East Jerusalem. And what are they doing with their military control? Well, this is from the article by the Electronic Intifada. Israeli forces began the demolition of some 100 apartments on the outskirts of occupied East Jerusalem early Monday. The 13 buildings targeted for demolition, many still under construction, are located in the Wadi Hummus neighborhood on the outskirts of Sir Bahir, a village southeast of Jerusalem in the occupied West Bank. Families were taken out of their beds, expelled from their homes, and forced to helplessly watch the army destroying them, according to Ir Amim, an Israeli group that documents settlement activity in Jerusalem. So it's really, really harrowing stuff that's going on there. We have a tweet from our fantastic... Or our fantastic foreign policy experts on Canada. So this is Chrystia Freeland, whose grandfather is a Nazi, and she's proud of him. So let's keep that in mind. This is from Foreign Policy Canada. Canada is deeply concerned by demolitions of Palestinian property in Sir Bahir. We call on Israeli authorities to halt such demolitions, which are illegal under international law and undermines efforts for a two-state solution. So we can't really get into why the two-state solution is garbage, but we'll focus on the first place on the first thing. So demolitions. What do you think of that phrasing, Mac and Dahlia? Do you think that's what's really going on? Are they just demolishing these buildings, or are they, you know, displacing people from their homes and destroying their property and destroying their really destroying their lives?
It's 21st ethnic cleansing. They're forcibly displacing people out of their native land, native homes, and it is what it is. It's ethnic cleansing.
Yeah, well said.
Yeah, and I think this is the next step by the Israelis in eradicating all the Palestinians. And this ethnic cleansing is just a way to erase the existence of the Palestinians by destroying their homes, their apartments, any property they own, and basically destroying their dignity and livelihood. And I believe that this is part of a long-term plan to completely eradicate any presence of Palestinian homes, lands, culture, anything relating to that there. And this is, and then another concern is that this is the first time that they've done it on Palestinian Authority land. And they've done this over the years several times. Instead of demolishing, I would say destroying.
Yeah. Bombing.
Obliterating their homes. Yeah, bombing their homes. And, you know, they say that East Jerusalem is under PA control, but now that they don't really care, there's no, you know, like, oh, you control this area. They don't really care. So this step is, you know, basically just wiping out the existence of the Palestinians.
That's, yeah, very well put and very terrible. And I would just like to emphasize the passive tone and the choice of words by the foreign by the Ministry for Foreign Affairs. So just so you know that there's two sides to the story. And let's just say that Chrystia Freeland with her Nazi grandfather are not giving the full story. So back to the article. This is from the UN monitoring group OCHA. Among those forcibly displaced or otherwise impacted are Palestinian refugees, some of whom today are facing the reality of a second displacement in living memory. These people, you know, this is not the first time they've been pushed off their lands. As well, we're seeing the Israeli state getting rid of the records about the Nakba. So that was the first time that Palestinians were uprooted violently by the Israeli security forces. So some 17 Palestinians already inhabited the buildings, according to UN officials, and many more would have been waiting to move into their homes. OCHA added that while it was trying to provide emergency aid to displaced families, no amount of humanitarian assistance can replace a home or cover the massive financial losses sustained by the owner. Several of the affected people report having invested their life savings into the properties after securing the required building permits from the Palestinian Authority. So, I mean, this is almost unimaginable to have people completely uprooted. This is, you know, I mean, if we look at the not-so-violent version of that in Vancouver, you know, we have gentrification where we push, where we price people out. But in, you know, in these more, you know, blatant settler colonialist and very violent, racially racist charged places where, you know, Islamophobia runs rampant and just complete disregard for Palestinian lives is had by the Israeli state, where they can just blow up their buildings. So you can, it's kind of two sides of the same coin, at least in my opinion. So back to the article. Wadi Hummus lies in Area A of the occupied West Bank, which is nominally under the full control of the Palestinian Authority, according to the Oslo Accords of the early 1990s, as Mac alluded to earlier. But as Monday's demolition rampage shows, PA control is illusory and Israeli occupation forces act as they wish. Israel refuses to permit virtually any Palestinian construction in occupied East Jerusalem or in Area C. And 60% of the West Bank that remains under full Israeli military control. So, okay, and this really sums it up nicely. This forces Palestinians to build without permits on their own land and live in constant fear of demolitions. So what we can see from people with that are defending Israeli actions of destroying people's homes is saying, you know, oh, they're building too close to this to the wall and that they deserve to have their buildings destroyed while there's no legal basis. They're not under IDF control. So they're having their lands invaded by these settlers. it's really unimaginable. I don't think I could ever understand what a Palestinian is going through when their entire life savings are destroyed in front of them by companies such as Hyundai and Caterpillar. Well, the IDF uses those companies' machines to do the destruction. Mac, Dahlia, do you have any thoughts on what the article is saying so far? Or?
Yeah, I would say that it's not really something new. Israel has done this for over 70 years. It's blatant stripping of their humanity, stripping their dignity, their pride, any sense of humanity, any sense of life that they have. And by doing these, you know, by destroying their homes and not allowing them permits, visas into their own places, it simply takes away their will to live.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically forcing them into doing decisions that they don't really want to do and kind of being okay with occupation and saying, you know, if we're going to live under Israeli rule, we might as well just accept this, because if they're going to keep destroying our
entire life savings,
exactly, all the money, all the, like, anything they have. So I think that, yeah, as I said before, it's the next step of the plan to eradicate them and kind of strip them from their will to live.
Well, and the defense ministry referred to this as a security threat, with these apartments being built too close to a wall on their own land. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand that, and I don't understand how someone could be so disgusting to support the destruction of people's homes.
I mean, all I'm going to say is we didn't cross the so-called border wall. The so-called border wall crossed us.
Yeah, very well put.
And I would say it's a security threat. I mean, the Israeli crews moved in overnight. When these people were
early in the morning, sleeping. Exactly. Thank you. That's a very important point.
You know, I'm not sure what a security threat is when these people are sleeping in their beds.
Brown people are asleep.
Exactly.
God, they're probably up to something. They're dreaming bad thoughts. So, yeah.
So these excuses don't really, you know, fly by.
No, they don't match up to reality. Exactly. And, you know, if you have any ounce of, you know, humanity in you, you'll see right through it. But if you're going to be a racist and just view that brown people's lives don't matter, then, and you're okay with settler colonialism, which, let's be honest here, most of the population is you'll be okay with that. So media photos show that Israeli forces used equipment from manufacturers Scania, AB, Caterpillar, and Hyundai in carrying out the demolition. Palestinians call for boycotting and divesting from these corporations, as they supply much of the equipment Israel regularly uses to demolish Palestinian homes and even to carry out extrajudicial executions by bulldozer. So that sounds barbaric and disgusting. And so this is from, what website is this one from? This is from the Times of Israel. On Monday, August 11th, the Israeli army, this is in 2018, the Israeli army used a militarized Caterpillar D9 bulldozer in an attempt to arrest 24-year-old Zakaria Al-Akra at his home in the village of Kabalan near Nablus in the occupied West Bank. So, I mean, these corporations, Caterpillar, Hyundai, Scania, AB, you know, where are they making their profits? Where are their, you know, where are their machines being used? It's not to build homes for the, you know, the largest homeless count of Vancouver. It's used instead to kill people and destroy their homes. So, I mean, that's just something that everybody, when they see a Caterpillar machine parked on the side of the road, make sure to throw a rock at it. Fight the power. And here's more disturbing things. So this is from Twitter. The Israeli government-backed Act.il app is directing its users to like a comment blaming the Palestinian Authority for permitting construction close to the wall and shedding crocodile tears after Israel demolishes their home. So I never heard about this, but apparently there's an app here that, you know, can direct people that are Israel supporters to harass and, you know, to punish Palestinians, not just in the physical world where their homes are being destroyed, but also on Facebook. So this is really disgusting stuff. So this is from behind Israel's troll army at anti-BDS app. As Israel demolishes 70 Palestinian homes today, leaving 100 families homeless, Israel's propaganda app is on Facebook promoting this act of forced displacement. App endorsed comments accuse Palestinians of crocodile tears and supporting terrorism, which is really funny because the terrorism is the people who are woken up early in the morning to have their life savings shattered just to make the settler colonial project continue and so that these corporations could make a buck. So do you guys have any reactions or thoughts about the destruction of these people's homes?
I mean, what's there to say?
It's somehow a contentious issue. So, I mean, here we are having to explain this to people.
I mean, I don't really see what there is to contest when these people are sleeping and having their homes destroyed and taken over for further settler colonial establishments. It's pretty straightforward. And, you know, if we are all humans, I think it's pretty safe to say that there shouldn't be much debate about it. And another thing I would say is that yesterday the United States, they blocked a resolution by I think it was Kuwait, Indonesia, and South Africa to condemn the demolitions happening by Israel. And of course, Israel's best friend, the U.S. and Trump, they blocked that resolution.
Yep.
So I think, you know, we can easily see that the state of affairs today is that even when these Palestinians' homes are being destroyed, taken away from them with no power while they're sleeping, the United States is still going to veto a resolution that simply states condemn this action. So, yeah, I think we can all agree that it is horrible and stripping their dignity away.
This is kind of an aside, but, you know, I've been seeing everyone clap it up for Ilhan Omar. And, like, obviously, you know, I appreciate the sentiment of what she's doing. However, I want to say that to all the, you know, the faux progressives out there, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, I'm thinking of exactly, you know, these are human beings. So they're using them for political capital, which is what's happening a lot. And which is why, you know, I'm so happy that you guys came on to discuss and, you know, give a voice to Palestinians. Because let's be honest here, if you turn on the mainstream media, anything, any news about Palestine, there will be no Palestinian discussing it. They'll get Chrystia Freeland to go up there and trot out Canada's supportive line, and then maybe they'll get Bibi Netanyahu to say some horrific racist things about it. But, you know, we need to see beyond just the politics of it. And I'm going to be honest too, those fake progressives, you know, while they're, you know, clapping it up over, you know, shooting down the anti-BDS bill and not voting for it, well, they just voted to give more money to the Israeli while they're committing war crimes, because, you know, the rapid expansion of settlements on Palestinian land authorized by the Israeli state is a war crime. What's happening in Gaza is a war crime. The fact that they're holding on to occupied territories through war violates the Geneva Convention. You can't do these things, yet here we are in reality that these, you know, this horrible, horrific settler state is able to do these things. So it's more than politics. These are human beings, and, you know, people need to get on the right side of history and really support Palestinians. Before we take a break for commercial, Mac Dahlia, would you like to add anything on what transpired in East Jerusalem?
I guess a more general statement would be, for anyone listening, I think that the most important thing is to listen to Palestinians, understand that there was a history before all of this politics happened, understand that there is a culture, music, food. There is more to them than just being victims.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, immerse yourself in, I guess, perspectives of Palestinian statements, listening to all kinds of perspectives from them, and trying to understand that these are people just trying to live.
Yeah, very well put, very well put. Mac, anything?
Exactly what Dahlia said. At the end of the day, we're human beings trying to live life.
You don't want your homes destroyed.
Yeah,
I don't want to live in an open-air prison.
Don't want to live in an open-air prison.
No poison water.
No blockade. Want to see my family. And, just worry about little silly stuff in life other than being forcibly removed off my land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, settler colonialism is not a thing of the past. It is currently ongoing in Canada and in Israel. So thank you so much, guys, for coming on and chatting with us. We're going to have to take a short break for commercials. We'll be right back after that. Sweet, sweet.
MRG Concerts presents Detroit indie rocker Steph Chura will be performing at the Biltmore Cabaret on August 1st with Vancouver's own Dadweed. Don't miss this show and grab your tickets at eventbrite.com or Red Cat Records.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band, swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
Crimes and Treasons Radio, this is Riff Raff. Every Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. on 101.9 FM with Relly Rails and Jules Andre Brown.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to Spencer Latu Show. So to end off our discussion about Israel-Palestine, let's talk about a solution to the problem. So this is a nonviolent strategy that's worked in the past. This has worked in, to topple the South African apartheid regime. You know, leftists across the world joined in an international solidarity campaign to boycott, divest, and sanction South African companies that were profiting off of the apartheid state. And there is a similar strategy coming out to deal with the Israeli apartheid of Palestinian people. However, it's meeting staunch resistance, as we're hearing from our previous program, Democracy Watch. There is a motion in Vancouver City Council to condemn criticisms of Israel as anti-Semitism that's happening in the States as well. And as the Israeli state continues its blatant war crimes, really, this is only going to continue and is going to get worse for what's left of free speech. I mean, let's be honest here, it's kind of illusory, especially in this capitalistic oligarchical nation that we live in that is currently genociding a people. So there's really not much freedom to be found. This BDS campaign is really, at least in my opinion, something that I'm supporting. I'm proud to support that. And it's a nonviolent solution to this, because really, you know, everybody says they want peace, and here's Palestinians and people who are standing in solidarity with them coming together in a nonviolent way. However, clearly that's not the right way to protest, which is why there's so much going on there. So to the people that don't understand BDS, I'll turn it over to my guests here. If you guys could help explain what's going on and what the tactics are and what you're trying to get out of it as supporting BDS.
Well, first of all, BDS stands for Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions, and it's a Palestinian civil rights movement that started in 2005, and its goal is to achieve freedom and justice and equality for Palestinians living in Gaza, West Bank, and even including Israel proper today.
It basically works to support international pressure on Israel and make sure that they're complying within the international human law, making sure that the occupation ends, making sure that the Palestinian refugees get their right to return, making sure that all the companies supporting the Israeli settlements and destruction all comply and end their product building. So the three parts to it, BDS, you know, boycotting, there's academic boycotts, there's product boycotts,
mm-hmm. Settlement boycotts.
Yeah, settlement boycotts, divestments, divesting from companies.
Yeah, divesting from companies such as Caterpillar, Lockheed Martin,
HP,
Hyundai, those who supply the IDF directly. Mm-hmm. And BDS is all about just having Israel come sit down to the table and have serious peace negotiations with Palestinians to end its occupation and uphold itself to the international law.
And yeah, another thing I would say about BDS is that it's more of, you know, it's Palestinians taking the lives into their own hands, taking matters into their own hands, stepping up to the international arena and saying, hey, Israel is an occupier and they are destroying lands, building on our lands and profiting off this, you know, making their monopoly revenue from destroying people's lands. So I think that the good part about BDS is that it's showing Palestinians into the international arena, bringing this movement live mm-hmm. to campuses, university campuses all over the world, Canada, Africa, you know, Middle East even. And I think
Ireland. Yeah, the entire country is boycotting divestment, sanctioning Israel. Mm-hmm. Roger Waters of Pink Floyd. Exactly. I mean, yeah, come on, what more do you need to know? Pink Floyd rocks, people.
Exactly. Big advocate of BDS.
Yeah, huge advocate. And, you know, the key to this all is that this is non-violent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, people are complaining about Palestinians at the Gaza border. See, even propaganda gets to me sometimes where I say border. It's not a border. It's not international boundaries. It's not a border. It's an open-air prison fence that people are, you know, quote-unquote throwing tires and rocks at snipers who are so far away that they're shooting them with sniper rifles.
Yeah.
That's not okay to protest, according to mainstream media, and neither is BDS. So it's really something else, and at least in my opinion.
Yeah.
That the amount of negativity, you know, op-eds that are, you know, mm-hmm. that will remain unnamed, even in our own campus newspaper, UBC, you know, blasting this as some kind of racist endeavor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. As Palestinians, no matter what we do, as long as we protest, whether violently, non-violently, peacefully, whatever means, as long as we say, hey, we want to live a dignified life on our land, we'll be always criticized for it.
And labeled anti-Semitic.
Anti-Semitic, terrorists, violent.
Israel is not all Jews. It's very, very anti-Semitic actually to say that Israel mm-hmm. represents all Jews, because there's independent Jewish voices that say otherwise. There's Jewish voices for peace that say otherwise. Yeah. So it's really actually quite racist to pretend that Israel is the same as an entire religion.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, BDS came to existence because Palestinians have been... I don't know how to phrase it, but we're tired of violence. We don't want more violence.
Mm-hmm.
And we see BDS as a peaceful way to achieve our independence and stop this mayhem that's going on right now. So those who say BDS is all about violence, that's very untrue. This is Palestinians' way of avoiding violence.
I mean, you've tried the international community. You've tried working through past presidents like mm-hmm. Bill Clinton. That's all fallen through. Now Jared Kushner comes up with the deal of the century for the people of Gaza, which is a horrible, let's just put them all in factories. Like, that's going to bring peace to the region. Come on, man. Come on, Jared. You know, I know that he was a slumlord before he got this job through his his father-in-law, but here we are. And, you know, once again, BDS, nonviolent. That's why I'm very proud to support it, because I couldn't think of a better, more fair way to deal with this, because, you know, quite frankly, you know, Israel always frames themselves as defending themselves. I mean, hello, you're implanting your settler state on top of these people. You know, quite frankly, they have the right to self-defense. And even in that instance, Palestinians are abdicating that and are choosing to go nonviolently in the face of horrific violence, in the face of war crimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I just couldn't think of a better solution. I mean, it's not really fair. I don't think it's, you know, the flack that Palestinians get is just so absurd at this point. And just all these anti-BDS resolutions just show to really prove how ridiculous the pro-Israel, anti-Palestinian crowd is. So, I mean, if you guys, I appreciate you coming on the show and talking and informing us and teaching us about Palestine and especially BDS, what I think is a really great and promising solution to this problem. So, I mean, if you want to leave us with any final thoughts on Palestine, BDS, what happened in East Jerusalem, Dalia, I'll turn this over to you.
I think that just to kind of relieve some of the misconceptions on BDS, as someone who studied IR and is going to get into this field, like, sometimes I get worried about speaking about BDS. But I think that the most positive note about this is it is a solidarity movement. And even when, you know, resolutions don't pass for BDS, I think it's a great symbolic gesture in which many people all over the world who do support BDS and have educated themselves about it are standing with Palestinians. And even the solidarity itself is a huge gesture. And it brings awareness and light to the fact that there are more to Palestinians than the occupation. And I think a lot of people should educate themselves on it and kind of read into it.
Yeah, it simply starts the conversation. Even like as Dalia mentioned, even if a BDS resolution fails, it starts the conversation. People start talking about it, and that's how second time BDS passes. So just having the conversation, talking about it, not being shy about it, leads to BDS resolutions to be getting passed.
Well, very well said. I really appreciate what you're saying. And, I'm going to be supporting BDS until there's justice for Palestinians personally. I know Ajit, who has so kindly joined us, who's dying to get on mic, also is a supporter. And, more power to the people of Palestine. You know, let's hope we can end settler colonialism, not just in Canada, but also in Israel. So thank you so much for coming on and enlightening us on this topic. It really means the world to me.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
No problem. Anyways, so that was a fantastic conversation we had. Very enlightening stuff. Learned a lot about Israel-Palestine and what's going on right now out there, especially with the war crimes being committed in East Jerusalem. And, of course, the monolith of mainstream media getting behind the Israeli state and supporting war crimes. So, at what point are we going to start holding CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, CBC, and the like accountable for being party to a war crime? Thank you again, guys. Yes. Bye, Dalia. Bye, Mac. Thank you so much for everything. You guys are the best. We have Ajit joining us now. Ajit, what's up?
What's up?
Welcome back, my man. It's good to see you. Okay.
It sucks that we don't have an additional mic because I would have loved to get in on that conversation.
No, I know. That was really intense. Ajit, do you have any thoughts on Israel-Palestine?
Yeah, I mean, what sort of pretext do you need to demolish people's homes? I mean, this tactic is used throughout any sort of state where colonial imperialism exists, right? You just need this false pretense, a fake encounter, and next thing you know, you're demolishing people's homes, you're killing so-called terrorists, aka brown-skinned males. It's just truly disgusting, and we have nothing but support for Palestinians. Both refugees, first-generation immigrants, as I believe some of them were. And, yeah, it's just fantastic. And we got to fight the intellectual fight.
We got to break down those narratives.
Right.
That's really horrible to view them as these one-sided, caricatures. Because Mac and Dalia, I just couldn't think of two better people that are, thanks to mainstream media, thought of as, just monsters. Couldn't think of nicer people.
Absolutely. No, fantastic people. As most Palestinians are.
Let's be honest, the media does this.
I shouldn't generalize like
just
that.
Just in general.
We're all humans.
Yeah, the media makes people out to look like monsters.
We've talked about this before, and as history students, this is probably one of the most disappointing things, is that it's like the Jewish state, especially the right-wing elements, are exploiting history to their advantage because this anti-Semitic you could say narrative, which has been solidified within especially Western media, but also Israeli media ever since the end of World War II, in which it does have a right place to exist because of what happened in World War II, but they exploit it for the wrong reason, in that anybody who tries to oppose Israel's policies, which in a large part are wrong,
huge, they're criminal. The blockade of Gaza is a crime against humanity.
Right. They label it as anti-Semitic or anti-Jewish, and the first thing people think of
which is absurd, because Israel does not represent all Jewish people.
No, it doesn't. Cannot
stress that enough.
Right, and it
there
has a
Jewish
large Arab population as well, right?
Actually, most of the population is Palestinian, so there you go.
Right.
Guess what? They also don't have any voting rights in West Bank and Gaza.
Right.
So there goes the only democracy in the Middle East.
No.
You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory. So now that we're wrapping up our past conversation, we've been covering this for a while now. The Green New Deal.
Hmm.
We're getting just more and more digging into it. You just find more and more things that really blow up the narrative. So right now, if you If you see the if you see the Green New Deal, it's usually reported as a grassroots as a grassroots effort.
It is grassroots because you got to be smoking some crazy stuff to think of the geoengineering stuff.
Right? Okay, yeah. So we're not going to go all the way there yet, but let's look at this. So we have mainly white liberals really seem to love this stuff. So we have Mother Jones, how the Green New Deal went from a grassroots organizer's dream to, let's see where it's where else it's going with this. How the Green New Deal went from a grassroots organizer's dream to a major talking point for the Dems. So this is a this is the Sunrise Movement, who we've discussed earlier, got their funding initially from Sierra Club. So they're part of the not-for-profit industrial complex as well. Its founders are also people from MoveOn.org, which is another DNC sponsored not-for-profit. So once again, very deeply tied into the democratic machinery. It's really disgusting that they're using kids to push these extremely political talking points, which we're going to dissect in a second.
Co-opt high school students too. Why not?
Yeah, we're going to co-opt university students like myself. Self-criticism. Okay, and then Sojourners. So Sojourners, I hope this is not the UBC Sojourners. I'm going to pray to God this is not the the UBC Sojourners, or this is a different one. Sojourner this is a Christian magazine, but there is a UBC Sociology Sojourners as well. So their headline is, "The Green New Deal's power comes from the grassroots. Grassroots coalition, the pack for a Green New Deal, demands action. Sunrise Movement, the force behind a Green New Deal, ramps up. Join in the grassroots support for the Green New Deal from Act Indivisible." So Indivisible is also once again another DNC NGO. And now in Canada, here's from Guelph today. It's just crazy how much they're doing to propagandize people. It's time for the grassroots to be heard, says Green New Deal. National grassroots group, any Green New Deal must directly help people. It's just nuts. OK, and the reason why I say this is all nuts, hopefully I wasn't bearing the lead too much. So, I spend too much time on YouTube and of course, looking up, Green New Deal materials. I've stumbled across this gem of a video. So this is from UN Environment, breaking news from the Spencer Latu show. UN Environment. So I was looking into this, Ajit. So if you go on the UN Environment website, you can go look up Green New Deal. And from a decade ago, 2009, there's a UN document on there talking about the Green New Deal, and they even put together this fantastic video. So we'll play it. I mean, there's a lot of text in it, so I'll read that aloud, but the music is really what gets me. So please join me as we watch this. So it opens with the UN Environmental logo. It says, "Towards a global Green New Deal." Wait, what? I thought this was from the grassroots. What? This is coming from the UN? This makes no sense. Yeah, and global too? What's going on with that? Here's the music. They cut to scenes of bankers. Oh, wait, they're talking, first things first, the 2008 financial crisis. Market crisis, says the province. Crash, says the Spanish newspaper. Crash, Washington Post. Oh, no. On Monday, September 29th, 2008, U.S. and on Monday, September 29th, 2008, $1 trillion U.S. dollars was wiped off the New York Stock Exchange in its biggest fall in history. Money is now going into the trash can. But there is a growing realization of another crisis undermining the global economy. And I would just like to say right there, another crisis.
Right.
So this is the thing that we're all supposed to be freaking out about. And they, of course, cut to no ice at the North Pole, scorched earth, global warming. And I would just like to point to, that's all we're going to watch from that video, because it really frames it, I think, perfectly, and what the Green New Deal is and what its, origins are with the most powerful.
And what it cares about the most.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So the first things first, what's the most important thing? What did they lead the video off with? Was it a starving polar bear?
No, it was millions of artificial fat dollars getting wiped off the stock exchange.
Fat financiers. That's who it was. Wasn't a starving polar bear. It was a fat New Yorker. So
Wall Street.
Yeah, Wall Street people, the true victims.
Hey, they're suffering, okay.
That's who the global Green New Deal has to help those poor.
They're
going to
be underwater if the sea level rises.
We've all seen The Day After Tomorrow. We know what's going to happen there. So, and then reading from, so it's just, it, and this is what bothers me more than anything. It's just the blatant lying about this stuff, because don't get me wrong, like you're allowed to have your own political views that you want a neoliberal fix for capitalism, but stop mm-hmm. pretending that you're these, you know, you're the second coming of the Black Panthers trying to save right. the people, and you're trying to really, you know, solve climate change and bring socialism. No, this
or,
is
right, or that you care about the environment genuinely to the point that you want to change it, maybe at your own expense.
Yeah, that you'd like to change the economy so that the global north is no longer living off the blood and resources of the global South. That's right. not changing, because right. the first crisis is 2008. So I would like to also note that because, so this is what I think, at least, right? So actually, we'll go to the description. So this says a lot. This is the description under this video posted 10 years ago. 10 years ago. 10 years ago.
Right.
So go look it up yourself. Towards a global Green New Deal, UN environment. Can investment in green industry technologies and nature-based assets help lift the world out of recession? UN Environmental and its UN partners are confident it can. According to Achim Steiner, the executive director of UNEP, it's already happening. He says getting out of the recession will be a boost to building a new green economy. Environmentally focused investment represents a historic opportunity for 21st century prosperity and job generation.
Okay.
Yeah, so this is just them.
So this is a jobs initiative?
Yeah, this is, and once again, this is not... And it's also very funny, too, because this YouTube channel was created in September 2009. This video was posted in December 2009.
Right.
So you can kind of see the agenda they're trying to get around there.
Right.
Yeah,
very
yeah.
timely that it happens right after the financial crash.
Yeah, weird how that ends up. I'd also like to share another video. This one's a lot creepier, but kind of it's like a prelude to what I think this whole Greta Thunberg, youth climate strike, sunrise movement, this whole PR stunt. It's a video of kids talking about World Environmental Day. So let's see if I can pull this up here. This channel features a lot of children in it to kind of drive the point home. So I mean, there's tree planting in Copenhagen. They're trying to promote World Environmental Day, which was created by the UN, so that's also as shady as it can be. Oh no, did they take it down? Huh. I wonder if they started privating the videos after. Oh no, here we are. Okay, so here's the World Environmental Day Legacy Project.
Please join us in celebrating World Environment Day.
Started by the United Nations.
It's a global celebration where every year,
everywhere, everyone does something positive for the environment.
This year's theme is biodiversity.
Which is just another way of saying
how we're all connected.
Mammals.
Kids.
Insects.
Adults.
Plants.
Birds.
Trees.
All living things.
Every year, a different country hosts.
And this year, it's Rwanda, a country in Africa.
Rwanda is home to the last 720 mountain gorillas left on this planet.
Rwanda has banned plastic bags to protect their environment,
which makes them very eco-cool.
So take action and express yourself on World Environment Day.
Organize it.
I'm just going to cut it there. So, you can kind of see, like, the what's the word I'm looking for? The rhetoric has really not changed in this decade before. They're still on the plastic bags.
No, yeah. It's, because I remember seeing ads reminiscent of this sort when I was growing up. And it was very effective, because I genuinely cared about the environment, because there was that whole...
Why? Thing. It's like you live there or something.
Right. Must be the air. It's natural. Or is it manufactured? I don't know.
Hard to tell these days.
Yeah. It hasn't changed. They pushed the goalpost marginally, right?
Well, they've added plastic straws.
Right.
Which is another great one.
We're good then. We've avoided the apocalypse. Yeah. Let's get out of here.
So no plastic straws, says Bill McKibben, but yes, U.S. military, as we covered in his New York book review article
right.
where he says the Pentagon is not as bad as people make it out to be. So
right.
that's $350.
You focus on the little things, you miss the big picture, and that's exactly what they're trying to do.
And if
right?
you even talk about the big picture, you have the head of 350.org, one of the biggest, environmental NGOs, the
right.
one that's taking all this Rockefeller cash,
mm-hmm.
is is saying, oh, you're wrong, you crazy lefty. It's the military's good. Did you know that? Yeah, what they're doing in Syria, it's just a weird happening that's happening there. It's not you know, the United States trying to stop a pipeline going through there into Russia and cut that up. So, yeah. So, and then if you go on to the UN Environment page, they have a Global Green New Deal policy brief, March 2009. So, once again, so they put the policy brief together, then they have the video in December. And it's funny, too, because there's only like 1,000 views on it. So I just wonder who's running it and just thought that, like, oh, no one's going to notice that, you know, we've had this video up for 10 years.
I don't know.
It's really weird. Yeah, it's really weird.
Kind of like creepy. You'd think for white liberals, they'd have better video editing, but no.
No, it was a pretty bad video, would you say?
Yeah.
The music was quite repetitive.
Hollywood helps them out.
So this is published by the United Nations Environment Program as part of its Green Economy Initiative in collaboration with a wide range of international partners and experts. So, you know, on the cover, when you think, you know, environment, right, you usually think trees, oceans, animals.
Any sort of ecosystem.
You know, just living things, right? You know, when you, I want to get into nature, right? Mm-hmm. So, but for whatever reason, the Green New Deal has a picture of a car, three wind turbines, and some trees around it and some water drops in the sun. So I guess it kind of just shows you what this is all about. You know, once again, you know, they said, you know, how are we supposed to get out of the recession? Oh, let's do some Keynesian spending on the green economy. And then, you know,
public money dumping.
Well, and we're also, you know, dealing with a climate change crisis. So why don't we just marry the two together?
Right.
Boom.
Exactly.
Problem solved.
Yeah.
So, okay. Looking at the contents here. So section 3, a global Green New Deal. And, you know, so we covered this earlier on the show with our fantastic special guest, Nusha, and Ajit, you were there as well.
Right.
And, you know, what were the things we're talking about, right? We're talking about energy efficient buildings, right? We're talking about transport, energy.
Smart cities.
Smart cities and carbon pricing and carbon, you know, just these financial instruments are going to be made, you know, for these pay to polluters, you know, kind of like a carbon tax that we'll be able to package these, you know, carbon offsets carbon derivatives and trade them on the stock exchange, you know, right? So it's just more financial instruments to keep capital flowing and keep profitability up. So, you know, that, and that's what's in Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's 2018 Green New Deal. So this is supposed to be brand new grassroots, you know, coming from those young commies in the in the squad, right? So, but, you know, as we look here, we have Section 3, a Global Green New Deal. Section 3.4, fiscal stimulus for 2009-2010, 3.41, energy efficient buildings, 3.42, sustainable transport, 3.43, sustainable energy. So as you can see, it really doesn't change much.
Right.
And, you know, this Global Green New Deal 10 years ago is a lot more, you know, on the nose with it.
Right.
You know, it goes out there and just says, like, oh, we need fiscal stimulus because we just had a recession.
Right, right.
And this is how we're going to get out of the recession.
Right.
I mean, what did history show? Well, they scrapped the Green New Deal. They didn't need the Green New Deal in 2009 because what they did instead was they created the tar sands and fracking and all these ways to deal with peak oil, but also, you know, put everyone back to work and create and, you know, keep the economy running that way. Right.
Right.
So, and of course, they bailed out the banks, took everyone's money and poured that into, you know, we in Canada, we bought up GM that went under and all the corporations that we then gave back for nothing. So just a quick refresher on history. And then under 3.63, the global carbon market, 3.64, global market for ecosystem services. So and 3.66, international coordination of a global Green New Deal. So a lot there. Ajit, any thoughts on just the eerily similarity to the, you know, Green New Deal that we're complaining about in 2019?
Right. I mean, this is a total precursor to that. If not the same thing, just rebranded, repackaged. It's this whole blending of capital, like eco-capitalism, I guess you could call it. And
except this one's like, you know, ours right now is a little bit more socialisty, I guess. I mean, maybe that's their marketing for the youth. Because actually, socialism polls high for youth.
Of course.
Over 50% of young people want socialism.
Right. I mean, you can't even afford 200 square feet, so of course you're going to be a bit socialist.
What was it, $1,200 USD for those San Francisco, like, you know, hostel?
Box.
Yeah, hostel boxes, right? So, you know, I see it as like a marketing thing. Like, this was more, you know, when we're in the end of history.
Right.
Right, neocons are coming, taking over, and, you know, the only way out of things is capitalism. But now that, you know, everyone's seen capitalism as a dumpster fire of a political economic system, they want socialism.
Right.
So now they're trying to package the Green New Deal, even though it's the exact same thing.
And it's also, they're less blunt with it today because the ones pushing it, the facilitators, the squad, you know, AOC, represent Omar, they represent this fake socialist, fake progressive veneer as well. So that's why their rhetoric kind of changes as well with it. But no, it's no long-term fix. It's just a way to sustain current...
Well, I guess we should define, what are we fixing here, right? So this is fixing capitalism. It's fixing the profitability crisis.
Right.
Because when a capital becomes overaccumulated, there's a tendency for the rate of profit to decline as Marx explains. So because what happens is that, you know, there's less and less profitable things because as technology gets more efficient, there's less and less money. There's less and less things for you to put your money into to get more returns on because you got to put in less money than you get out.
Right.
So there's less opportunity for that.
Right.
The rate of profit hits zero. So, I mean, rather than us sitting around with a bunch of oligarchs with overaccumulated capital, what we should do is just create a system without profit, put the surplus value to serve the entire population, which is what socialism
is.
The means of production are owned by private capitalists who are only seeking a profit. It's to sustain the needs of everybody.
Yeah.
But instead, of course, right, rather the capitalists look at this crisis and are like, what kind of, you know, crackpot schemes can we come up with to keep this silly system of private accumulation of capital under socialized means of production, under socialized, production, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we work in factories together to build stuff.
Right.
So we socialize production, but the value that's created is privately owned.
Exactly.
Right. So, and once again, the capitalists look at this and they're like, how can we fix it? How can we find more things to invest in? So they're like, oh, we're just going to build some windmills.
Right. Exactly.
Because, you know, the idea is that you put your money into the windmills. And then, you know, the windmills create value because a human being made it.
Exactly.
And the extra goes in my pocket.
Right, right. And it's a lucrative investment because there is a desire
just
to see
like
that change.
This little electric car on the cover.
Exactly.
This is what we're going to throw our money into. Priuses.
Right. Or Tesla. Whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And then, okay, so I was getting into Twitter fights over this, naturally. And, you know, that's no better way to spend your day.
Absolutely.
And, you know... there's the fake left activists respond to me saying, you know, well, that's the U.S. The Canadian one hasn't been established yet. We don't know. We're going around in these quote unquote town halls asking people what they want to hear. Well, I mean, clearly the town halls are just a marketing stunt because, you know, the gang's all here, everybody, you know, the United Nations and all the capitalists that support those NGOs have already made up their minds. And if it's a global Green New Deal. So whatever the United States is what the rest of the world is going to look like. Because guess who the global hegemon is?
Right. It's obviously Madagascar. No, exactly. It's, they lead the way. And, well, not even the states, pretty much the people who run the states.
Yeah,
right?
Of course. Yeah, the oligarchs of the United States. And okay, so I guess what I'd like to, kind of wrap up this Green New Deal discussion with is, you know, we don't have a left.
No.
The left doesn't exist.
Other than us, people like us.
Yeah, random people, disparate podcasters and tweeters and, shit posters
on
Reddit.
The political system is so consolidated under, you know, the ruling class's thumb that there's no oxygen for the left to breathe in. It's like
they've killed us.
Who knows? Maybe AOC, when she was like 19 entering college, had these sort of sentiments like us.
Funny you mentioned that. Right. We found her blogs.
Right.
We'll cover that on another day.
Sure.
But let's just say that those blogs involve a lot of she referred to the United States as an innovation economy where they come up with great ideas. What do you think of that? Do you think that their economy is built on great ideas or?
Well, it's obviously built on recycling money, but it's interesting because.
And where did these great ideas come from? Google? Oh, that was a CIA project, right? Oh, iPhones? That touchscreen? That's Air Force technology. The internet? That was MIT. So it seems that the United States takes the money from the workers, gives it to the military to develop with no cost, then hands it over
to
the private sector.
I feel some of the most vulnerable members of society to this kind of romanticization of like American power is the immigrant communities and are the first generation ones because they're told these narratives that you ran away from your country because socialism, communism ruined them, destroyed them when, you know, it doesn't work like that. So yeah, so those thoughts of hers might be genuine because she was from youth built up on these narratives that, oh, look at Disney, look at this freedom that you have of expression, of youthful jubilance translates into awesome commerce, and we just accumulate money, and look at the Puerto Ricans in New York, they're doing awesome, like,
and don't care about all the people in Africa we're stealing from, and Asia and South America and the Middle East.
Right, its power is attractive, really attractive to people who don't have it, and you know that's how they get you in, right? These people have been in power for generations, for hundreds of years. It's nothing new to them. It's just day by day processes, but to members of the community of people who I feel like Obama, you know, when he was in college or when he came out, had some actual genuine socialist ideas, or at least he had a longing to help his community.
Well, Obama, he was a conservative, you know, grassroots organizer, right? Like he was legitimately a conservative. He never said he was a leftist. Yeah, right. But like, you know, he's also this blank canvas that we can project whatever we want to. You know, and if you're doused, you know, as we all are, if you're in the West, right, with Western propaganda about, you know, Western idealism and how great capitalism is and the people of the global South don't exist that we're stealing from.
And it's the consumer products themselves. I mean, this with the British Empire on their tea boxes. They wrote, look how great the British Empire is, stuff like that. It's the process hasn't ended, right?
No, you're totally right. And on that note, we're going to go to commercial. We'll be right back after that.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. Favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder Magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
AMS Food Bank. Your access to money during the studies at UBC will most likely be limited, but it is a priority of the AMS Food Bank to ensure your access to food is not. The AMS Food Bank provides emergency food relief 7 days a week for all UBC students. To volunteer with the food bank, or for inquiries about how to take advantage of the services provided, contact them at foodbank@ams.ubc.ca. For more information, find the AMS Food Bank on Facebook or feel free to visit anytime across from the Wellness Center and Sprout.
Metal Radio, bringing you the best metal for over 30 years on CITR. Tune in every Saturday from 1 to 3.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to Spencer Latu Show. So we have about 5 minutes left. So we'll wrap up this discussion. So this phrase may be a little bit done to death, but the revolution will not be funded.
No.
Cannot come from NGOs.
Well, why would it be? That's contradictory, right?
It's, yeah, it's these people, and what drives me like up the freaking wall with these NGO liberals is that why would David Rockefeller sow the seeds of his own destruction?
Right.
Why would Warren Buffett help socialists take his money from him?
Right.
Why would Bill Gates want the betterment of humanity? And if he's such a great guy, why is he still getting richer every year?
Exactly. If you really want to help, why is he so obsessed with accumulating more wealth? You know what I mean?
Exactly. So it's just all PR and people just can't seem to break through it. And you know what? It's hard to think. It's hard. I unfortunately work near Whole Foods. So
that's the crux of the issue right there.
I see those types. I saw Oxfam you know, volunteers or workers who, you know, talking to people on the street outside Starbucks and Whole Foods. So, you know, really peak liberalism.
Right,
there.
Right. And in Vancouver.
What I and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it as we wrap up our conversation. You know, do you, I think there must be, under this Western, you know, liberal propagandized population, I don't think, and you know, this brings me back to the Frederick Jameson quote, you know, it's easier to imagine the end of the world than the end of capitalism.
Hmm.
That
great quote.
It's very prescient. I don't think they can see beyond what's, you know, beyond this world. They can't see beyond, you know, begging for charity outside of Whole Foods and Starbucks. You know, we need solidarity, not charity.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
We need to build people up.
It's there is this conscious fear within them that they're already living this lavish lifestyle. So if you're already comfortable, if you're already loving the status quo, why would you try to seek out anything to change it, right? Mm-hmm. But the other thing is that charity outside of Starbucks is their comfort zone, and they don't want to go outside of that. And it's marginal help. What we're taught is that marginal help is great because it's you.
You're doing your part.
Right. And as an individual, you only have so much agency relative to all of society.
That, and exactly. That's like the perfect neoliberal subject. You're only an individual. You don't exist within communities. Exactly. You don't exist within organizations. You're a personal brand.
You're a person, right? And then solidarity. It's, well, a lot of these people build their wealth from the same sort of organizations, which are either downstream from the corporations who do this type of stuff or upstream, whatever. It's the whole supply chain, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It does take a real mindset change. And I got a great idea. If we can prove that the ruling class is aliens, I think we'll get the whole world to care about
them.
Yeah,
no.
Because clearly we care more about that.
No.
Than
storming Area 51 is somehow more important than
it gets more traction
than
this.
Climate change. So that's where we're at, folks. Yeah, thank you. thank you for that, Ajit. Area 51 somehow is a bigger story than what's going on right now, which I find hard to believe. But here we are, 2019.
Doesn't mean we will stop. We won't stop fighting.
No, I'm not going to stop fighting, no matter what the aliens say. So, I mean, it's just I'm at a loss, Ajit. I'm at a loss.
Right. It's. I don't know. It's, we need the assistance of these fake liberals, like here at Vancouver. Oh.
We need socialists to come down from space.
Right.
To come help us. Maybe the socialists are locked up in Area 51. That's why we need to storm
them.
That's where the revolution.
They're either there or in hell, as Reagan said.
Sorry, I just needed to get some X-Files in there. And, you know, we take this light, because this is one of those things you either laugh about or you cry.
Really, it's
because,
come to that point.
Yeah, because the left is not real.
No.
The left is the capitalists. There's no separation.
It's amazing, because out of every source of kind of any sort of force which has fought oppression throughout history, and of course they get targeted the worst. They're like the Palestinian students who were awesome that we were just talking to. They get narrative set upon them, which is just completely negative to their cause. The left has always been the biggest threat in history. Really, it has. And what's the best way to extinguish a threat is you own it. You make it your own, right? And that's exactly why we're saying it doesn't exist, because it doesn't.
Ajit, that was so perfectly put. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to leave it there, folks. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next Thursday. If you want to hear more, check out our back catalog, Apple iTunes podcasts, The Spencer Latu Show. Find me on social media at Spencer Latu, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back next Thursday, 6 to 7:30 p.m. Stay tuned for more awesome CITR programming.
Hey, it's Max from Laverne, and you're listening to CITR. Yeah.
As I get older and fatter, I try my best not to just get sadder. Matter.